This week's conversation with Jacqueline Fox is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. Two big things happening at Sassy Jack's. In addition to the expected opening of the Sassy Jack store in early September, be sure to sign up for the September Soiree online retreat, September 15 to 18. Each year, the soiree has been a big hit, and this year promises to be the best yet. You can now also sign up for a series of October workshops with Jackie Duplessis. The October 3 and 4 workshop is called Hold Dear, a beautifully decorated tiger maple project box with two storage areas and a pincushion in the lid. That's followed by Love That Red, a drawn thread sewing roll-up sampler on October 5 and 6. Then October 7 will be a bit of a mystery that will involve a fall flame stitch in a beautiful bespoke wooden box. Then on October 8, you can stitch the Morning Glory work basket. Sign up for all of these workshops is by email only. Also, Kim is thinking about starting a linen club. Share your thoughts on the Sassy Jack's Facebook page. Much more information about all Sassy Jack's activities is available through the Sassy Jack's website, sassyjackstitchery.com, the Jack's Journal newsletter, or the Sassy Jack's Facebook page. It's going to be a busy fall at Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Don't miss out. And now, our conversation with Jacqueline Fox. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Waxing Moon Designs, Jacqueline Fox. Jackie, welcome.
Thanks, Gary.
Good to be. Fun stuff you do. Fun stuff.
I think stitching should be fun. I mean, I'm one of those people that likes kind of instant gratification, or maybe not instant, but quick gratification. So I like small projects, and I think a lot of other stitchers do too. So that's kind of what I focus on.
Yeah, that's the lifeblood of cross stitch. I think no question about it is those small items. People like to do them, stitch them, finish them, hang them up, do whatever. So yeah,
and there are some people that just adore doing those giant projects where, you know, every square inch is filled with solid stitches, but so even they, I think, sometimes need to have a little bit of in between those big projects and pick up something smaller. So
yeah the full coverage people I admire. Period.
Yeah. Me too. I could never do that. I've done some, I have a series of monthly samplers that I did that were larger, and I stitched all of those myself, stitched the models, and they took a good bit of time to do, and I was ready for some small things after doing 12 of those.
So. those full coverage people, all kinds of respect for them, but I don't want anything to do with it. Yep.
That's, yeah.
Oh, when they finish them and they put up a picture and show themselves holding the thing up, it's like, wow, that's so impressive.
It really is. And those are the things that you really, those type of projects, you really want those preserved and framed properly, because you've got so many hours, sometimes worth of work into them, that they really are heirlooms.
Oh, yeah, no question, yeah. Well, yeah, and even if they are a copy of some piece of art, who cares? They're just gorgeous. Yeah. Stunning stuff. Yeah.
They are. And, you know, it's the craftsmanship that's gone into it.
Right.
That is, because, you know, cross stitch is like anything else. You have to practice to get good at it. And it shows.
Yeah. Yeah. People who do it well, it definitely shows. Yeah. Yeah. I always want to, I think what they should do with most of them is they should show a before so we can see the pile of skeins of floss that they have to buy just to do it.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
And just the blank canvas, and or even just show when they've got, you know, a few stitches done, and just to get an idea of the size of the stitch versus the size of the finished piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's impressive.
It sure is. It sure is. Yep. So I love the story about how you named your business Waxing Moon Designs.
Yes. I was looking for an unusual name. And, you know, some of it had to do with, I took an astronomy class in college, so I knew all about the waxing, the phases of the moon, waxing and the waning. And when I got out of college, I've always been an avid gardener. My grandparents taught me how to garden, and I helped them a lot. And when I got out of college and finally got my own home, I really kind of jumped into gardening, and I was reading all sorts of stuff about gardening, and I was getting kind of having fun reading the old Farmer's Almanac, and they had articles in there about planting by the phases of the moon, and so I was kind of trying that a little bit, trying my hand at that technique. And so when I was trying to come up with a name for my business, I decided, they said in the Farmer's Almanac that if you are growing like vegetables where the fruits are above the ground, you plant the seeds during the waxing moon, the waxing phase of the moon, because it is supposed to make the seeds and the plant grow better. Hmm. So I thought, you know, that kind of stuck in my head. And I thought, you know, if it's good enough for a garden, maybe it's good enough to name a business after.
Sure.
So I, you know, said maybe if I, you know, if I name my business Waxing Moon Designs, it'll grow. So,
yep.
So that's what I did. And it, the other thing was just that it's a unique name. It kind of stands out.
Oh yeah. No, there's no question about that. Yeah. So, all right. So do the vegetables above ground actually grow better if you plant them during a waxing moon?
You know, I was never.
Okay.
Here in Iowa. I was never really able, I mean, you have to be able, it has to be not raining, and it has to be fit to, you know, during the waxing moon to get those seeds in the ground. And it just seems like here in Iowa, it's the weather's so changeable that I ended up just putting the seeds in the ground whenever I could get them in. So,
yeah, it's more important that they be in the ground than what the moon is.
That's right. And I don't know. I think my vegetables seem to grow okay anyway. So.
Yeah. Probably water and fertilizer is more important, I would think. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that right now, I mean, I'm still a big gardener, and right now my garden is like in full, you know, full harvest mode. Everything's coming at once. And I just canned like six quarts of green beans here right before I got on the phone.
Ooh.
With you.
Oh, you're a canner too. Oh my.
Well, you got to do something with all of that produce, you know? So I do a lot of canning and freezing. I give it to my kids and share it with neighbors, and it's a hobby. Keeps me busy. Yep.
Now, when I was growing up, we had a quarter acre that we planted all kinds of vegetables, and my summers, and I know this time of year, I know it well, were spent either planting or picking. And, you know, picking green beans and snapping them, and my mom canning them, and or picking corn and shucking it. And, the lectures I got about leaving silks on corn. And, you know, to the point where when I got out of college, I swore I would never have a vegetable garden ever again. And I haven't.
Yeah. Well, you know, my kids were kind of the same way, because I would ask them to help me in the garden. I didn't work them too hard though, but they were kind of like, oh, we hate this. But you know, now they're, you know, getting in 20s and 30s, and they're kind of like, mom, you know, they're asking me questions. They'd sort of like to try their hand at gardening. So we'll see.
Yeah, no. And my mom grew up picking cotton. She lived in, I forget where she lived, but anyway, Southwest somewhere. But anyway, she picked cotton, and for her to be out in the sun all day long picking stuff was nothing. And I hated it. Oh, I hated it. Go pick the beans, and you know, green beans. Stop putting out beans. You know,
yeah.
Stop it. You know, when's the frost coming?
You know, it's not. I enjoy planting in the spring, and I do enjoy the harvest, but I'll tell you, here in Iowa, when it is 90 some degrees and the humidity is high, the one thing that I really hate to do is weed. And But you know, that's part of it too.
Yeah, that goes along with it. Yeah, no, that's exactly why I don't have and never will have a vegetable garden ever again. No, no.
There's farmers markets in St. Louis, right?
That's right. That's right. Plenty of them. Yep. Somebody else do that. Yep.
Yep.
So you learned stitching from a college roommate.
I did. I've always been very crafty, and my grandmother taught me how to embroider.
Okay, wait, back that up. Okay, so we hear that a lot, that you you know, people have been crafty. So then you did, your grandmother taught you to embroider, so you came from that a family that was always creative and always building things or making things.
Well, you know, not so much my mom, because she was, she had her own business. She was a hairdresser, and so she was really busy with that. She didn't have a lot of time to do crafts and stuff, but my grandmother on my dad's side, I spent a lot of time with her when I was little or growing up, and she, you know, she did a lot of, she did tatting and she did crochet. She made rag rugs, and she did, embroidery. And so she did teach me how to do those things, but, I had never tried cross stitch until I got into college, and that would have been like 1982. And my roommate, I saw her working on something and asked her what it was. And she showed me how to do it. And I took to it like a duck to water, I guess. Kind of got hooked on it.
What is it about cross stitch compared to embroidery?
I think I enjoy the repetitiveness of the cross stitch, because I find it very relaxing and kind of meditative. You know, it's just a series of X's, so it makes it very simple, but at the same time, it's you do have to pay attention to what you're doing and count your stitches, and it's very precise, and I like that. I also do some embroidery on my own, just kind of the more of the free form embroidery, and you know, the different embroidery stitches that are different from cross stitch.
Yeah.
But the cross stitch is always what I come back to. It's just I find it very relaxing. I stitch a lot of my own models, and even after all these years, I still enjoy stitching them. So
you like that working on the grid part?
Yes, okay. I do.
I'm curious, because I just started a crewel embroidery piece here a couple weeks ago, and hadn't done any crewel embroidery for some time, or any embroidery of any kind for some time, and that, you know, that there's no grid I have to stick to is an adjustment that. Yeah. It took me a minute to, wait a minute, I can put this really anywhere I want it.
Right. Yeah. It's just a different, I don't know. I feel like I like the challenge of designing for cross stitch as well, because of the restrictions kind of that you have with the grid system. I mean, sometimes it's challenging to get all of the detail that you want in a piece without making it too big. And that's what, you can put a lot of detail in if you're doing a big giant piece, but when you're, you know, doing maybe a, I don't know, 60 by 70, stitch piece design, you're kind of limited in the amount of detail that you can put in. So it can be kind of challenging to, come up with something that is recognizable.
Yeah.
So, but I enjoy that. I mean, it can be challenging at times, but I like that. So.
So an art background of some kind, or you just.
Yes, I went to Iowa State University, and I have an art education degree. So I came back, I was already engaged to my husband now. We dated all through my college years.
Oh, and that's romantic. Now that's nice.
Yes, we started dating when I was 16. I was still in high school. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. That you're the only the second couple I've ever met that met in high school. Wow, that is so impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. So we he was already employed here back in my hometown, and so I knew that I needed to have a degree in something. I was a commercial art major, mm-hmm. and like graphic design, but I decided to switch to education because I thought I'd have a better chance at finding employment, you know, where I wanted to live, which it, you know, I did. I taught middle school art for a few years, but we have had some problems with declining enrollment in these parts of the country. You know, yeah. A lot of kids leave. A lot of the families have moved away from the rural areas. And so not as many kids. So our little school system kind of downsized a little bit, and they kind of rolled the middle school art position in with the high school. So, you know, I did substitute teaching after that, and I decided to start my own business. I started doing freelancing for magazines.
Oh, and okay.
Fieldwork magazines. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Middle school. That was my first teaching job, was middle school science. Two classes of 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You want to talk about, well, you know the spectrum right there.
Yes.
From elementary to know-it-all 8th graders. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. They can be really fun and really frustrating at the same time.
Yep. Middle school. That's a day of teaching every day. Yep.
Yes.
Holy smokes. Yeah. So, all right. So that's interesting. So you did for Needlework Magazines. So is that where the designing part comes in, as you start saying, hey, I could do this too? Or
yeah, I started kind of designing for myself when I was in college, just doing, you know, trying. I bought some graph paper and from an art supply store, and I started charting out some real simple little designs for myself. And
old school. Graph paper. Yeah,
yes. And when I started, when I got graduated from college and I decided to start submitting my designs to magazines to see if they would buy them, those designs were on graph paper. There were at that time, that was in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And there were not any, you know, computer programs. Well, there were very few computers at that time.
Right, yeah.
But I bought graph paper and I used colored pencils and freehand drew everything and, you know, colored it all in with colored pencils, and it was a process. So yeah, and if you make a mistake, that was, you know, real fun to try to correct a mistake too.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
But no, I was very, you know, I just decided, you know, I'm gonna submit some of these to these like Leisure Arts and Cross Stitch magazine, Cross Stitch and Country Crafts. Those, I don't know if you remember those.
Oh,
magazines.
Do I? Oh yeah, yeah.
And one of the big ones that I did a lot of work for was a company called the Needlecraft Shop out of Texas, and they had, I think, For the Love of Cross Stitch magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the name of it. And I did a lot of work for them. And but yeah, I was really pleased and surprised when they got back to me and said, absolutely, we want to buy these.
Oh, that's
what I did for, oh gosh, until the late 90s when I started this business.
Yeah. What's that process like? So graph paper, colored pencils, and yeah, erasing a mistake. There's a challenge.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So then when you get done, so if you're going to submit to a magazine, then so when you get it charted, then you stitch it, and then do you send them the graph paper? Is that what it is?
I didn't even stitch it. I just charted it. No, they have stitchers. They have stitchers that do it. I would chart it, and I have a, you know, a colored pencil color for each color of floss. I'd have to draw my own chart on the or graph on the out,
right,
on the chart with the floss colors, the coordinating floss colors, and I would just send them the original. I mean, because I didn't have at that time, there was not any color copiers that were around here that were available. I'm sure that maybe they were available at that time, but not around here.
And you wouldn't have been able to afford them anyway. So
yeah. So I would just put them in a manila envelope and mail them the charts, and they would get back to me and let me know which ones they wanted to buy. And they would pay me a flat fee. And that's what I did. That's what I did for a living. I just kept pumping out chart after chart after chart, yeah, and sending them to magazines. And it was great because at that time I had little kids, and it was flexible. It allowed me to make an income, but still, be able to be home with my kids. And right. It worked out really well for me. Yep.
Wow. Sending off, there's only one copy of a design, and you trust it to the post office, and oh boy.
Well, at that time, believe it or not, I don't think I can't recall that I ever lost any checks in the mail. I've lost a lot of stuff in the last few years in the mail.
Right, right.
I don't think the post office is quite as reliable as it used to be. No. But back then, I don't think I ever lost anything that I recall. But yeah, it's taking a risk because that's a lot of hours in some of those charts.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's the whole thing. That's why it's so interesting, because these days, you'd have a color printout that you do in your home, and you'd have photographs and all kinds of things, and we think nothing of it. But yeah, that none of that existed then. Yeah. We didn't even have cell phones, didn't exist. None of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So then when one showed up in a magazine, that was the great reveal for you then, right?
Yes. Yes, it was, because they had it stitched and framed and everything. So when it showed up and I got a copy of the magazine with my design on the cover, I was like, wow, that turned out good. Because, you never quite, as a designer, and I still run into this, where I'm never quite 100% sure that two colors are going to look great together.
Right.
And which is until it's actually on the fabric, and which is why I stitch a lot of my own models, because sometimes I find myself making corrections as I go along, hiding to change a color here or there. And can't do that if you hire a model stitcher. So,
right. Right. Wow. What an experience. Yeah. Here comes the magazine. I get to see my work for the first time.
Yeah, boy, it was exciting too. I remember, so exciting seeing your design on the cover of a magazine, and it was in full color, and it was just I thought I'd made the big time.
Yeah. Well, and that was, for even back in those days, to print color pages on magazines, that was expensive.
Yes.
So to produce those things, that was every page, because I was editing trade magazines at the time, and we'd have, we would have meetings. All right, this one, these two articles are going to be in color because we have really good photos, and the rest are all going to be black and white, because you had a budget for how many color pages you could have. And it was very expensive. And now it's, why would you print black and white?
Right.
But, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I ran into that. I remember when I started in 1998. Or 97 is when I decided to start doing my own designs and publishing my own leaflets. And I can still remember, it was, I'd have black and white printing done, and then I'd have to take a photograph with a 35 millimeter camera of my model and take the film up to the developer. The only place here in town was, there was a drugstore on the corner on Main Street, and I would take the film up to them, and they would have to send it away to someplace in Wisconsin.
Right.
So I'd have to wait for several days before I'd get the photos back. And then it was hit and miss, because, if the lighting wasn't right, you just never knew how the photo was going to turn out till you got those prints back. And it kind of depended on the developer too.
Sure.
If they underexposed or overexposed.
Yeah.
So it was always kind of a, you know, on pins and needles waiting to see if I was going to be able to use any of those photographs or if I was going to have to retake the whole thing, another roll of film. But, yeah, that was fun. And I don't miss those days.
No. Yeah. That's weeks go by. Especially if you have to redo it, where now it's just seconds and minutes. And,
yes. Exactly. Yeah. Now I take a picture of my models with my cell phone and, right. And then I email it to my computer. I email the photo and yep. Then I just lay everything out on my computer. I send the leaflet layout to Vistaprint, and within like usually a week and a half, I get my leaflets full color printed back in the mail. So it's so much quicker now. And yeah.
Yep, it really is. So did Waxing Moon Designs just evolve, or did you sit down one day and say, I need to make a business out of this?
I decided, you know, after, oh gosh, I was doing magazine work for, probably close to 10 years. And finally one day I just decided, you know, I was selling my designs, for a flat fee and selling all the rights because that's what the magazine, you know, they invest a lot into, they invest in having the model stitched and, you know, all the photography and the framing and all of that. So they've got money invested in that. And
they got full rights then. Wow.
They got full rights. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And, you know, they paid me what at the time was a fair price for that, for the amount of hours that I put into it. So I, you know, that worked out fine. But as time went on, I started noticing I was going to more needlecraft shows. I'd drive to Des Moines. There was a needlecraft show down there where the designers would have their booths set up and just seeing how other designers were publishing their own designs and mm-hmm. selling designs. And I thought, you know, I could do that and I would be able to keep the rights. And instead of just getting a flat fee, I'd be able to, you know, one design would produce a lot more income over a longer period of time. And, so that's what made me decide to start my own publishing business and the Waxing Moon. And, you know, I kind of laugh because I decided to start this business and I had two sons at the time and the youngest one had just started kindergarten. And I thought, this is the great time. I'm going to have all this time to work on my business while the kids are at school. And darned if my daughter didn't decide to be born. So so it's kind of like, okay, I guess I'm going to run a business and have a new baby at the same time. But made it a little bit more interesting, but we made it through and it worked out. So,
yeah, but the real benefit then through all of that time is you're not having to be at an office at 9 a.m. So
exactly.
You can work it out. So that, you know, that's great that you made it work that way.
Yes. And, you know, it was when I started Waxing, it was a lot more work than what the designing for the magazines was, because it, you know, when you're running a business, you're wearing all the hats. I had to do, you know, all the packing of the leaflets, the folding, the gluing on the photos on the covers, because that's, you know, I ordered photo reprints, and that's what I used for the cover of my leaflets, yeah. The color photo. And, so there was a lot of work involved in that. And it's still, you know, it still is a good deal of work sacking patterns and packing orders and shipping to distributors. So, right. It does take time, but the nice thing is, as my kids got older, you know, they were able to help mom sack patterns and do that kind of simple work. So, they were my little helpers.
Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want me to cook dinner, I got to get this done. Chip in.
Well, I did make it worth their while. I paid them to do it, and it was, you know, it's a lot better than mowing the lawn.
You bet.
It's a lot easier than mowing the lawn. So they didn't complain too much, but it was, you know, it's tedious work when you're sacking hundreds and hundreds of patterns.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always marvel at that because, you know, if I buy a chart that comes in one of those plastic sleeves and take it out and then want to put it back in. And every now and then I'll stop and think, oh, if I had to do hundreds of these like designers do, there must be a skill level or some technique you use to get them in there quickly because
I could sack patterns with my eyes closed. I mean, I've done so many over the years. My hands just kind of go through the motions automatically. But it's not like it was back when I first started designing. Cross stitch was, you know, at its, I mean, it was huge.
Well, there was one next to every gas station. I mean, for crying out loud, there were shops everywhere.
Yeah. And when I first got picked up by Hoffman Distributing, which is it's my main design or main distributor. I was, you know, they would order like 1,000 leaflets at a time. And that is a lot of, I was kind of shocked, you know, it was a surprise for me that the numbers were that big.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to sack and to fold and sack all of those patterns. So,
right. Wow. But a feel good 1,000 patterns. Oh man.
Yeah. And you know, the first time I went to, they don't have that trade show anymore, but there was a trade show in Charlotte, North Carolina. At the time, and it was a big one that it was a wholesale trade show. And, the first year I went to that and meeting some of these designers, the older designers that were, real popular in the, you know, in the '80s and listening to them tell stories about how big it was back then. And they were telling me, oh, it's nothing now compared to what it was. but just the numbers that they were talking about. And I was like, it was amazing. Mm. And it's never been, it hasn't been that big, since I've been doing it, but I see now the resurgence. It seems like a new generation is starting to discover cross stitch. Yeah. Which is, it's great. And I'm seeing the numbers, the interest pick back up again. And, it's wonderful. So.
The internet has played a major role in that and not just the pandemic internet, but the internet, even before that, there's just been, you know, a whole different communication channel. But yeah, back those days, that was just stores. That's the only option you had. But oh boy, there were so many of them and they were always busy and it was crazy times. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm very lucky. The town that I live in, we have a needlework shop right on the corner and it's a big one called the Stitchery Nook. And she draws people from, you know, states away. It's because it's worth the trip. I mean, she's got a very large store and it's very well stocked and she does retreats. She has the upstairs of the building redone and she hosts retreats up there. It's just, you know, I'm kind of spoiled because I live about blocks away.
Oh no, that's dangerous. That's not spoiled. Yeah. That's dangerous.
It's so fun. It's like being a kid in a candy store going up there and seeing all the new stuff that comes in. So yeah.
Well, and as a designer, though, a real plus, if you just walk a couple blocks down the street, if you need some thread, wow, that's huge. Yeah.
Yes. I get most of my thread, a lot of the thread companies that I use on a regular basis, they usually supply me with thread. They replace what I use for my models. But, you know, yeah, if I run out rather than contact the thread company and wait days, you know, to have it mailed to me. It's so nice to just be able to hop on my bike and buzz up a couple blocks to Main Street and everything I need is right there. So
that's great. So Stitchery Nook still, is it Osage, Iowa? Yeah.
It's Osage, Iowa. Yep. And it is worth the trip.
Okay. Well, next time I get to Iowa, I'll look that up. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Do you ever, through the years now, ever get phases of burnout?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Around, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, it was like, well, cross stitch was kind of, I was seeing a decline. A lot of shops were going out of business. The internet had gotten big, of course, and there were so many pirate sites or needlework places out of Russia and China that were, you know, stealing patterns and posting them on their sites. And it was kind of, it was frustrating. And I found myself, there was a time when I was like getting kind of burned out just from like, why should I keep doing this? Or is cross stitch just, is it going out? Is it kind of circling the drain? It's kind of picked back up. It's picked back up a lot, actually.
Right.
And I just decided that, I still love that creative process. And I just decided to stop focusing on the negatives that I have no control over anymore. There's no reason to focus on that.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine people lifting your designs and selling them. That just must suck the life right out of you. That's so frustrating and so frustrating that people actually are buying them. Yeah.
And it wasn't even so much that they were selling them. These are like pirate sites over in China that were just giving them away for free. And I just had to tell myself, the people that are going to those sites they're not going to spend money on my patterns anyway. The likelihood that they were actually going to buy one. So it's not like I'm losing a sale. And I just decided there's a lot of stitchers that do want to support the designers, and they are more than happy to pay us
right.
for our designs.
Right.
So, and I've just focused on that. And I said, I'm just going to focus on the positive parts of the internet.
Yeah.
And so many more opportunities have opened up too. I started an Etsy shop, which really helped. It really helped me keep my old patterns available. I digitized all those. And so I kind of embarked on making the most out of the internet instead of complaining about it. Yeah.
No, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. The people who are going to buy those charts, they're never going to be customers anyway, because they're never going to. Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah.
So I designed for the people that enjoy my designs and support me. And there's just more and more of people like that. And, the stitching community, they're a great supportive community. And I just appreciate them so much.
Right. So what, I'm sure you started, DMC Floss was your mainstay and probably still is. What did Overdyed Floss, when those showed up, what did that do for you? Was that an exciting new world or just another thing to work into your designs?
No, I did DMC Floss when I was working for the magazines. And, when I started Waxing Moon, that's when the Overdyed Flosses were just coming in to widespread use. And so I jumped right on that because I loved stitching with them. I loved the fact that you could take, one skein of floss and stitch a portion of the pattern of the design with it. And you didn't need to add any shading because there was shading already inherent in the floss itself, which gave the designs a very distinctive look and just an interesting, interesting visual texture to it. And so I really like that. And I do use almost all Overdyed flosses in my patterns now, usually Weeks Dye Works or Classic Color Works or Gentle Art. And, but I always include the DMC alternates because I know, not everybody has access to the Overdyed flosses.
Right. Yeah. So that you stay with the main brand names. Cause that, through the years, Overdyed flosses, a lot of companies have come and gone, but,
Yeah.
Those three are pretty stable. Yeah.
Right. And I love trying new flosses, and I have in the past, but yeah, as a designer, you want your pattern to be able to remain, like a viable pattern. You don't want the floss that you're using to disappear or become unavailable, you know, a year after or months after the pattern comes out.
Right.
So, and I've had that happen over the years, you know, that's live and learn. And,
yeah,
it's not to say that I won't use a new company. I still do. A lot of times stick with the companies that have been around for a while, just because I'm pretty sure they're going to continue to be around for a while. Right.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. As a designer, you got to look long term, and because if you can't sell a chart because people can't get the thread, then you either rechart it or it just dies. And you created it, you'd like it to live. Yeah.
And that said, I do always put DMC alternates. So if you can't get the floss that I call for, the DMC is going to be a pretty, pretty close match. But that said, it's never an exact match. I mean, it's going to look a little bit different with DMC than it will with the overdyed.
Right, right.
But it's still, I'm surprised a lot of people send me photos of designs of mine that they've done, and they have stitched it with DMC, and they looks great.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing with, we did a design, Jennifer, Beth, and I forget what it was, a year or two ago, and Jennifer did hers in DMC floss. And we had other people doing it in DMC, and then Beth and I were doing it in silk. And every time that we would see it, it would go, wait a minute, why am I messing with silk? Why am I, why am I spending money on silk? Because that DMC just looks terrific.
Yep.
There's a reason that thread in all of its colors is still the mainstay today, as it delivers time after time. Yeah, you can't.
Right. My only thing with DMC is that, you know, you're getting more of a flat color, and my designs, because they are pretty simple, I don't have a ton of color changes, which is why I use the overdyed, because it adds that visual texture, mm-hmm. Without to change to a different shade of floss. And so when you're stitching with the DMC, you're not getting those subtle color variations that you get with the overdyed. And when I designed with DMC exclusively for the magazines, in order to get that shading, I would have to, switch colors. So I use a lot more colors to get that same shading effect if I'm using the DMC.
Yeah.
So, it's just a little bit different designing technique, but the size of most of my designs are pretty small. So the DMC usually, it's a little flatter in color, but it still looks good. I mean, I'm impressed with the with how good it looks when I see the pictures of the ones that are stitched with DMC.
Right. Oh yeah, it still works. It still works. The back in those days in the 80s and 90s, if people have any charts, and you see somebody, it'll pop up on Facebook where they'll have an old chart they're working with fractional stitches and back stitching. I mean, that was just commonplace all the time. And now people don't want anything to do with it. And to me, they add such a nice flavor to it. Did you do fractional stitches early on and then get away from them, or do you still use them?
I still use fractional stitches sometimes. If I feel like I have to have a fractional stitch to get the detail, and I use some back stitching for detail, obviously, but if I can do it without a fractional stitch, I like to do that, because my whole thing is making it, my designs, I want them to be fun to stitch. And sometimes you get too many fractional stitches and it's not so much fun anymore. It can get tedious and more apt to make a mistake and get frustrated. But I used to use a lot more fractional stitches when I designed for magazines, because I had a whole different style back in those days when I was designing for magazines, because they would tell me what they wanted. You know, they would give me an idea of what they wanted to see. And so that's what I gave them. I kind of designed for their, for the look that they wanted to have in their magazine. Mm-hmm. But, when I started my own business, I focused more on, kind of ease of stitching. I wanted my designs to be very doable. Some of them are a little more challenging, but a lot of my designs are doable for someone who's just starting, who's just learning, or who's maybe just getting back into it after a long hiatus. And the whole thing with cross-stitching, I think, in my opinion, I do it for enjoyment and it should be fun. And so I try to make my designs enjoyable. I want the stitchers to enjoy themselves and have fun while they're working on them. And I get that a lot from people. They're like, this was really fun to stitch. Not a lot of color changes, not a lot of fractional stitches. And so it goes really quickly and they get a nice little finished product in a short amount of time. And that's, you know, that makes me happy that it makes them happy.
Right. Well, that's what I noticed about your designs is clearly that they are approachable at all levels, particularly, you know, and especially at the beginner level. But there also is they don't look beginner to me. There's a level of sophistication, I guess, but yeah, they don't look like something that you would give to a 10-year-old who's just figuring out how to thread a needle. And there's just a real nice look to them without them being overly challenging. So it's, and I think that's an interesting area to work in. Can you have a little bit of a more advanced look without it being difficult to do? And so, they work out.
Yes. And I think as I kind of evolve as a designer, and, you know, because when I first started, my style was a little bit different than it is now. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of, that just sort of came naturally. The more I designed and the more patterns I put out, and I would see what would sell well versus what wouldn't sell as well. I just gradually found a look that, and I really didn't even notice, but I had other people talk to me about, and they're like, oh, I can tell that you designed that. Your designs have a certain look about them. Mm-hmm. And as a designer, I didn't really see, you know, I didn't really see that they had a certain look until later on. And then I'm kind of looking back at my catalog going, yeah, I guess I can see that now. But, it's just something that has evolved. And I've always, my main focus has been to keep my designs doable and approachable and fun to do. And, the style itself is just something that, I've just sort of has evolved over the years. And I design things that I like. I design things that inspire me. If I come up with an idea and I feel inspired, then I'll do a series of designs. But I kind of know if I don't enjoy designing it and stitching it, then it's probably not the stitcher is maybe not going to like it so well either. So I try to go with things that I like, that I feel inspired by.
Yeah. And you do, you use that series approach a lot, and effectively. So you find something and then, how many variations can I get off of this?
Yeah. And it's more so, you know, like with my house series that I have done, the house trios, that kind of just started as a one-off, you know, a one-off idea. And I had so many people say, are you going to do more of these? Are you going to do more of these? And it's like, well, okay, I will. And they were very, you know, those, the two designs that I did at the beginning, which was the Halloween house trio and the patriotic house trio. they sold so well and there were so many people asking for more that, and the owner of the Stitchery Nook was saying, oh, these are really popular. You got to do more. So I just went ahead and I had people email me and say, what about doing St. Patrick's Day? Or what about doing that? So I get suggestions from stitchers. And if it's one that I think that I can come up with a good idea for, then yeah, I do it. Yeah. So
when you go to do a series, it must be a particular challenge in there to make each one different, but have them all look like they fit together or they go together. That's got to be interesting at times to pull that off.
The series can be a challenge, but yet at the same time, once you stitch or once you've designed a few of them, I just get on a roll and they're easy. I have a lot of ideas usually if I'm doing a series and I can just whip them right out.
So you're one of those artists that has a head full of ideas and time is the limiting factor then. Okay.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
All right, we're going to run out of time, and I knew we'd end up here. So you're also, I got to learn about the greeting cards, but then you're also doing some rug hooking and punch needle designs?
I haven't, not so much anymore. I used to do greeting card design.
Because they look terrific.
I do have some designs that are still available on an online online venue called Greeting Card Universe, and they're a print, like a print to order company, and people can just go on there and order cards from there. And I do have some card designs still up on there, but it's been a while since I've done card designs. And I've also done I was selling quite a few of my custom rug design patterns and on my Etsy shop and also punch needle. But even though I love doing those things, the cross stitch has gotten busier. I mean, I've really gotten, the market has really picked up for cross stitch again. And so that's kind of, it's always been my bread and butter and it's my specialty. And so I tend to put most of my time into the cross stitch.
Hey, I don't blame you. Yeah. Those greeting cards are great. They really look good. So are those painted first or?
Those were all hand done. All of my greeting card designs are hand. I either used colored pencils or acrylic paints to do them and did it the old school way. Oh. I didn't use any, I mean, there's no like Illustrator or, you know, computer illustration or anything. It's just all hand stuff.
Oh, they look great. And then I was looking back at your Etsy store to see if they had become cross-stitch designs. I didn't find any.
No. It's totally, totally different styles. And part of the reason is I find that my greeting card designs are very detailed. I tend to do very realistic looking, detailed things. And, you know, I couldn't do that. That wouldn't translate well into the size of cross stitch patterns that I do.
Yeah.
I'd have to do those great big giant things to get all that detail in.
No, not that. No. Well, they look great. I was actually going to show them to my wife. She needs to buy some. That's the kind of thing where it's print to order. So you're not hauling around a bunch of inventory or anything like that. So, okay.
Yeah. And I found that's one of the wonderful things about the internet too, that I really like is the fact that I can do my art, put it up online and sell it digitally or, through venues like Greeting Card Universe where they do all the printing and I don't have to carry any inventory. Yeah. So,
well, they're attractive cards. So
people
ought to check them out. So, you know, one of the things that I picked up, even though you have an Etsy shop, is that you seem to be a real strong supporter of local needlework stores. And to me, that is absolutely critical. But online, it's so easy to just start selling stuff online and PDF downloads. But if we don't have those stores, this whole thing will just not be good. And you seem to be a real supporter of the local stores.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I still have all of my designs available. Well, the old ones that are out of print. That was the reason I started my Etsy shop, was because, those old patterns, I still would have people contacting me wanting to know if they could still get copies of those. And I, you know, the shops just weren't carrying them anymore because they, you know, were 20 years old.
Right.
But, I digitized those and put those up on my Etsy shop. And that's the reason I started the Etsy shop, was just to keep my whole catalog of designs available, and also to make them available to people that live in other countries, because, you know, the cost to ship something, across Europe, I don't think there's a lot of needlework shops in Europe. I think there's still a few, but, from what I understand, kind of few and far between. So, it was to give access to, you know, my old patterns and to people that might not live in the United States and have all the needlework shops that we do. You can't have a thriving cross stitch community without access to, you know, physical access to all of the wonderful products that we have available. And to be able to go into a shop and actually see it close up in front of your face and not on a computer screen. And, you can't replace that. I mean, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. No, I feel bad for people who don't have an accessible shop, or have to drive 4 hours. It becomes a day trip just to go to a shop.
Because
here in St. Louis, there's three shops now that, one of them, just a new one, that offers cross stitch. So I'm set, but, some people just don't have that option. And boy, so many times, if you could just hold the thread or look at the design or look at the ground cloth, it makes such a difference. Yeah.
And to have a shop owner too, who is knowledgeable and can help you if you don't have access to, maybe they don't carry the fabric that I specifically call for, but they probably carry something that is almost like it, and they can, you know, put different fabrics in front of you, put the flosses on the fabrics so you can see what, you know, how they look against different fabrics. To be able to do that and have a shop owner kind of walking you through all that and helping you pick out things, it's wonderful. And I hope there are more shops popping up in the future, because it would be great having it like it was in the 80s, where there was like a shop in every town.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. We need to support those shops at every turn. And, even if it's just buying DMC floss, it's more expensive than Joann's, but, they offer so much more than a Joann's will ever offer. And
you're not getting the service that you get in a needlework shop.
Right.
And there's no one that's, I mean, the ladies that own, or the people that own needlework shops, are very knowledgeable. And if you have any questions, or you need substitutions for something in the supply list, they're the ones that are going to be able to help you find that stuff.
Yeah, they know the substitution from another thread line that you may never have seen. Yeah,
exactly. Right.
Pull it off the rack and say, here, use this one. And, oh, okay, on my way. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Jackie, thank you so much. Really, just a whole rack of great designs and fun things to stitch. And thanks for taking time to share it all with us. Waxingmoondesigns.com is the website. So thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and happy stitching.
Yep. All right. And thanks to everyone for listening.